Blog Talk Radio.
I'm gonna be
was Chain of Strength with Never Understand. Quickly, I would just like to thank Rich from Conformity Clothing. ConformityClothing.com, Conformity with a K, has some really kick-ass clothing, and they support a lot of punk bands with the sale of their clothing. So they're not making money off this. They're really trying to keep the scene alive. So if you get a chance, please go over and visit Conformity Clothing at ConformityClothing.com. That's Conformity with a K. And I really appreciate everything that Rich has done for me to support my show. Up next, we have Philadelphia street punk band, The Virus. The Virus formed in 98 with Mike Virus, Chris Expulsion, Fat Dave, Jeff, and Jared. They were active from about 98 to 2004, and they really included a plethora of great East Coast talent. Not really a true revolving door, but the band had a lot of members, including Mike Authority from No Authority, Tim from the Oi Scouts, and, you know, they played with legendary punk bands at festivals like the Promote Chaos in Atlanta and the Holiday in the Sun in England. Mike Fire since has started a few bands, you know, Cheap Sex, and now he they broke up, and now he's in Evacuate. This is The Virus off the Singles and Rarities LP. This is Throwaway Kid.
Lame by Fire in the Asylum. You think I'll taste good? Well, fuck if I know what that means. But I'm guessing that I should. Shame I couldn't figure it out. I'm still wondering why I came. As I look around, I think we all feel the same. This party's kind of lame. This party's kind of lame, lame. This party's kind of lame. So I head out the back door.
Washington,
You named it after the Sandspit and Purdy. Tell us a little more about the band.
Okay, well, actually, Purdy Fit started in, like, 2002, 2003 with our singer guitar player actually played drums for them way back when. They did a couple parties, broke up, and then we resurrected the name in the band in 2008. And me and Mo, the singer, we basically wrote all new material. And then we just picked up a bass player, Joe Strong, who actually played guitar for MDC and toured with them for about 2 to 3 years. We're really stoked on Joe. He gives us a really kick-ass sound. You know, we're kind of doing a little bit of ska, too, so he really keeps that solid bass line going. Really happy with him. So, you know, we've done a few shows in the past year. We did this big festival up in Washington called Punks in the Woods. Just a bunch of local Washington bands up there. And then we just did Christmas Night in Tacoma at Hell's Kitchen with the Broken Oars. That went really well. We also did a couple shows in Southern California. We played with The Spooky, which you had on last week, Mike Monster, really cool guy. And then they're actually flying down here to SoCal next week, and we're in the studio for a few days, and then we're heading to Vegas. We're doing Friday night, January 14th, at the Double Down Saloon in Las Vegas. And then we're doing the following night, Saturday, at a little taco shop called Yayo Tacos. And we're also playing with the Uncivil, my other band, and another local band from Orange County called Indian Burn. So.
All right. Now, from what I understand, Purdy Spit has a release now, and you guys are working on another release?
Well, you know what? We've just released a recent demo that we just wrote some new songs, and we released it on iTunes, so you can get it on iTunes. You can go to myspace.com/PurdySpitMusic, and there's a couple of our new ones. Our older stuff's a lot more hardcore, but we're in the process of re-recording it and recording some new songs. We'll probably have a release date of probably February, March, around then, and then we're going to hit the road for a tour in May, and we're going to do the tour with the Uncivil as well.
So where are you planning on touring? Is that mostly just the Northwest and West Coast?
Yeah, you know, we're going to kick it off in Seattle, go on down through Portland, probably do San Francisco, and then we're going to shoot on out probably to New Mexico, probably hit Salt Lake City as well, and then probably back down to L.A. So.
Good, yeah, let me know when you're coming out here because I can get you some bands to open up for you and we can get you a place to play.
Absolutely, I will be contacting you for that, definitely. And then one more thing, just want to talk about the Uncivil real quick. We're coming out on a big compilation, and the compilation is called a Tale of Rotten Orange. It's mostly Orange County bands, and it's running a little late. It should be coming out here in a couple weeks. And the bands on that, we have Bone Crusher, The Boners, which the Boners, the bass player is Johnny Ransom from the Smut Pellers, really good band. And then we got the Broken Bottles, the Crazy Squeeze, the Crowd, Disguster, the Dogs. We have Drug Lords of the Avenue, Folktale Devils, Foul Response. We have the Junk, Killing California, Narcoleptic Youth, No More Saints, the Piss Pop, Smogtown, Social Task, and the Stitches coming out. And you can go to www.orangefight.com to find out about that comp, and they're going to have a pre-sale for that.
Okay. All right. Good. Now, you don't sit still. I mean,
no,
anything besides Purdy Spit and Uncivil that you're doing?
Nope, that's it right now. I got my hands pretty damn full with that. We're losing our guitar players for the Uncivil. Both of them don't have time, and their heart's not into it. So basically we're regrouping. My bass player's jumping over on guitar, so we're trying out new bass players now. They're going to finish up this month with us. So, yeah, I got my hands full with these two bands big time. And then I do Uncivil Productions, which I throw all these shows. I'm putting on the Battalion of Saints show January 22nd. That's going to be a great one. And then one more show at the end of the month, the 29th, with the Spooky. That's going to be a great one, too. And that's going to be in Capistrano Beach at the Doheny okay. Saloon.
Good. All right, well, I'm going to play Pretty Spitz, Crazy Girl. Could you give us a little background on the music?
Well, it's kind of self-explanatory. My singer, he's just hating on those women. So this is basically about everyone's ex-girlfriend, man. Crazy girl.
Yeah, I got a couple of those.
We all do, man. We all do.
All right, well, Troy, thanks for coming on, and we look forward to hearing more from you guys, and I'll be emailing you.
All right, thanks, Frank.
Okay, thanks a lot. This is Pretty Spitz, Crazy Girl. Negative Approach's first show was actually in the basement of the Necros drummer, Todd Swalla's mom's house. This is off the Negative Approach Ready to Fight demo. This is a self-titled Negative Approach. They play a lot of the old school punk, hardcore. They sound a lot like Sick of It All, Warzone, Slapshot, some of the early Agnostic Front stuff. He also has American Werewolf on there, Carbomb, Tommy Gustin, and the Rats, or Tommy Gustin and the Idiots. And he's got a song on there called We're All Gonna Die Like Rats, which is a great song. Subwaste is on the label. Small Town Riots, talked about those guys last week. Great band. And at some point, I'm going to be interviewing these guys. But right now, I'm going to be playing them. Not right now, but you know, I'm going to play them until I can get them on. And I will be getting some of those guys on. But right now, we have a band from Germany on. SS Kalier is a German street punk band. The band was actually originally SS Kalier, and it was spelled ESES Kalier, which actually means it escalates. The SS moniker has led to a belief that they're a neo-Nazi punk band. They are not a neo-Nazi punk band. They were formed in Ruhrpott, Germany in 2003. The boys are still raging to the present day, and a rumored U.S. tour to support their upcoming release is floating around. This is Until We Strike Back off the 2008 release, Addiction.
Yeah!
that was, like I said, blacklisted. Up next, we have a band that was originally from Houston, Texas, but actually became successful after moving to San Francisco. Verbal Abuse started in 81 with Nikki Sikki. After Nikki Sikki quit the band, Sick Pleasure, and moved to Virginia, then back to Texas. And not a lot of bands were playing fast hardcore in Texas, except for like DRI and NBC. But Verbal Abuse relocated to San Francisco at the end of 2001. They lived in the infamous Vats, along with members of the Dicks, NBC, as well as Harley Flanagan from the Cro-Mags. And they actually signed with Foul Records later that year in 81. Verbal Abuse, really, they were around from 81 to 95. And then they reformed in 2005. They are still around, although in 2007 they reported a forthcoming Verbal Abuse album, but Metal Archives reported that, but no real news has been heard from the band. But this is Verbal Abuse with, what do I have keyed up here? It's Verbal Abuse with Boredom. Cause for Alarm has always centered around Keith Burkhardt, who is a singer. And the original lineup actually included Rob Kabula and, I probably ruined his name, Alex Kinnon. And they actually went on to play in Agnostic Front. This is Cause for Alarm off of the Poison in the Machine. This is the song's same name. This is Cause for Alarm with Poison in the Machine.
We'll be right back.
day that was cause for alarm with Poison in the Machine. And like I said, they, you know, a couple of their guys went on to join Agnostic Front, who's a great band. And, you know, before we go any further, I just wanted to announce a couple things. The lineup for the next couple weeks, I have guests lined up. I have Jack Kelly from Slapshot, who was also in DYS, on next week. And I have, and I believe he was in Urban Waste, if I'm thinking right. I think he was. And then the following week, I have Bobby Steele. Bobby Steele, of course, was in the Misfits, and then he went on to form the Undead, and they're still around. And the week after that, we have Roger Merritt from Roger Merritt and the Disasters, and, of course, Agnostic Front. So, and then we're working on a couple other guys. Upcoming on the show, we will at some point, we've been given a yes, basically, to an interview from Henry Rollins, from Ian MacKay, Sean Stern, and several other people. The Harbor 81 guys have said yes. TSOL, Jack Grisham from TSOL, some of the Urban Waste guys. But, you know, it's so we've got a lot of great interviews coming up. So please tune in every Monday, or you can download us. You know, download San Clemente Punk as a podcast. And you can also, if you don't get to hear the show live, you can listen to it in a loop if you go to the site and click on it, and it'll play. Next band we have is a band from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. A lot of times they were, you know, people pronounce it as Die Cruisin'. It's actually pronounced Die Kreuzin', and it's actually broken German for the crosses. And the band picked it from a German Bible. And then it, depending on how you put the inflection, a friend of mine said that it also means the tick. I don't know if that's true or not. They did become a hardcore punk band in 81, and they rapidly became a source of inspiration for a lot of alternative musicians who cited them as influences, including Soundgarden, Sonic Youth, Voivod, Drive Like Jehu, Alice in Chains, and Neurosis. The band had been called the Stellas originally, when Dan Kavinsky was on vocals, Brian Endres on guitar, Keith Brammer on bass, and Eric Tunson on drums. They were around from 81 to 91, and they actually were one of the first bands, I think they were the first band signed to Touch and Go, and I may be wrong there. If I'm wrong, you know, please send me nasty emails. Also, you can email me or get a hold of me, and we'll talk about that later. But this is Die Kreuzin', and this is off of their debut, Cows and Beers. This is Die Kreuzin' with Enemies. Is also a comedian, by the way, and sometimes performs stand-up at the show. Although Flanagan says that John Sharon writes most of the music. And Brutal Nights, along with, you know, like Career Suicide and Terminal State and Fucked Up, were part of just a resurgent punk scene in Toronto. And they were actually voted in 2006 the best punk band in Toronto's Now magazine. They've been active since about 2006. They're still around. You can find them on their MySpace page, actually. I don't think they have a proper website. But this is Brutal Nights with Too Many Tattoos.
How long will this go on?
Up next, we have a band out of Ann Arbor, Michigan. They only actually made one album on Statement Records. The name was the name of the band was called The State, and this was their No Illusion EP. These guys were a great hardcore band, and they only actually made one EP. This is off the No Illusions EP, and these guys were, I really like these guys. This is The State with Attention. Okay, that was The State out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and up next we have we're going to play these guys, because we only got a couple minutes before we're going to get Vic on here. This is a band called UK Subs. Everybody's punk knows them. They're an English punk rock band. They were among the earliest of the first wave of British punk. And they formed in 76, and they're actually still around, although Charlie Harper really has been the only constant mainstay in the band. I'd love to go on more about him, but I got to get this song played. I really like this song. This is actually off the it's kind of a bit experimental. This is actually off their Another Typical City EP. This is the UK Subs with Another Typical City.
Painted walls and on its own.
That was the UK Subs with Another Typical City. Right now we're going to get into a couple commercials, and then we're going to come back with Vic Bondi of the legendary Chicago punk band Articles of Faith. And we will be right back.
Fight Words Radio Network listeners, if you are into 80s metal, don't forget to check out All Hail Hair, the show that brings back the greatest era in music, the hair melodies. Join host Bob Carroll and Francis as they walk you down memory lane and transport you back to the late 80s when your biggest worries were gas money, homework, and trying to get a date for the weekend. All Hail Hair not only plays the staples from the hair metal days, but also bands like London Choir Boys, Kix, Crocus, Jet Boy, Pretty Boy Floyd, Shotgun Messiah, and others you may have heard but have forgotten. They will also keep you up to date on the status of your favorite 80s bands. All Hail Hair is not only the place that you will hear the latest from your favorite 80s bands like Poison, Def Leppard, Rat, Warrant, Winger, and Danger Danger, but also you will hear from current bands like Wigwam, Pretty Maids, Vane Vagina, and hardcore superstar that are keeping this sound alive today. So slip on the parachute pants, spray on the Aquanet, get into the leg-worn spandex, and tune into the best 80s metal show, All Hail Hair. Friday night, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Fight Words Radio Network.
Okay, just real quick before we get into the interview, I promised Darren from DC Jam Records I would release this, and I want to release it in the middle of the show. On March 5th in Reseda, California at Weaver's Place, and Weaver's Place is at 19312 Van Owen Street in Reseda, California, which is a, in L.A. The DC Jam Records will be holding DC Jam, actually they're calling it Working Class Punk Show, or Working Class Punk Series, DC Jam Records Working Class Punk Series. This first lineup is going to be Downtown Brown, Dirty Filthy Mugs, Generators, and Aggression, and that will be March 5th. So if you're in the area, you should really get out to see it. That is going to be one hell of a show. I'm going to be there. I know that. Up next tonight on San Clemente Punk, we are privileged to be joined by Vic Bondi. Vic is the frontman for the legendary Chicago punk band Articles of Faith. Articles of Faith was a band that formed originally in 1981 at a time where a lot of punk scenes didn't look to Chicago as a punk town. Vic Bondi, who was vocals and guitar, Dave Shields was bass, Joe Scuderi was guitar, and Bill Richmond, also known as Virus X, was on drums, proved everybody wrong. Articles of Faith quickly gained a following with their melodies and hooks that really betrayed a broad spectrum of influences such as jazz, reggae, and a little bit of funk. Vic Bondi's songs were intense and powerful and outdistanced a lot of the Article of Faith's contemporaries. Please help me in welcoming Vic Bondi to San Clemente Punk. Vic, thanks for joining us tonight. How are you?
Great, great. Like the UK Subs that you just played.
I love it. I found that at a garage sale for 50 cents.
It's amazing. It's got that kind of rockabilly twang going on in it.
Yeah, no, I love those guys. I found that in that Oxygen EP.
Oh, wow. So that's how you got that, huh?
yeah. So, now, Vic, when this all started in 1981, did you still think you'd be playing as a great punk band in 2011?
Well, I didn't know that Articles of Faith would be, but I kept playing pretty much the whole time. I've never really stopped playing. I've been in a succession of bands. So for me, of course I would still be. I'll be playing until they put me in the grave. But I think it was really great this year to have the reunion with Articles of Faith, and I was excited. I was thrilled to play with those guys again. They're terrific musicians and really good guys.
Yeah. Now, Vic, where did your love for music come from?
I don't know. Where does anybody's love for music come from? I guess, a lot of it is just, it's the thing that gets me going. You know, I can't wake up in the morning and not have a song in my head. So, it's just one of those things that's, very persistent component of my life. It works for me like pretty much nothing else does. So I guess I was born with it.
Okay. All right. Now, Article of Faith's influence seemed to be very broad. Could you tell us a little how you guys mixed them all to form your sound?
You know, we really struggled to get the sound of the band together, I think. You know, Joe Scuderi and I had been in a band before Articles of Faith called Direct Drive, and we used that name in the beginning when we played with Bill and Dave, we didn't – I don't think we had a sound at first. I think we really struggled. I think we were very Clash derivative. We just couldn't – we couldn't find the right thing. And then after I saw the Bad Brains play at the 930 Club in D.C., I went back to Chicago and told the guys that we had to play fast. I think it was when we all sort of settled on the idea that we would be the fastest band in Chicago, all the other musical elements started to gel around that core, right? So I think it took us a while to find the glue that would take all of those different components, you know, Bill's jazz drumming and Joe's reggae playing, and bring them all together and get that sound like we got. But I think speed was the unifying factor. So once we made a commitment to being a very fast thrash band, we were able to integrate those other influences pretty seamlessly. And then later on when we slowed down, all of those other influences really helped carry the band to a different plane. So I'd say that's probably where it comes from.
Okay, now, how did you come up with the name Articles of Faith, and were there other names kicked around?
No, well, like I said, we originally were this band, Direct Drive, but Articles of Faith was a song that I had written, and there wasn't any significant profundity to it. It was a really cool name. In retrospect, I think it fit the band really well in terms of the intensity of the band and the passion of the band. I think that name worked really well. But there wasn't a lot of thought and a plan to it. It just sounded really cool. And, you know, those were the days when everybody was trying to put a cool band name together and a cool band logo together. And before that was halfway to making an EP if you had a name and a logo.
That's right. That's right. Now, and you weren't cool unless you had, like, a moniker. Like, I was in a band called Suspicion of Ignorance. So we were SOI.
You had to have that anagram, right? You had to stand for something
right.
else. D-R-I, A-O-S, M-D-C, right? D-O-A.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
So, now, Vic, you were described as kind of a protest singer with leftist views. Would you agree with that assessment? Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely fair. I mean, I maybe be more accurate to say I was a protest singer with anti-authoritarian views. I don't know that they were specifically leftist, but yeah, I'll go left. What the hell, right?
So,
the guys
you know,
on the right are pretty much ignoroid, so I'll just stay on the left.
So pretty much typical punk, you know, you saw, you know, and punk always seemed to be kind of the voice of that generation, not so much, you know, people associated punk with, you know, this, well, they were viewed as just troublemakers, rowdy. You know, we were rowdy at the shows, but, you know, by and large, we held a mirror up to the, you know, to the authorities and said, look, you know, you guys are saying we're bad, look what you're doing. You know, it's 10 times worse.
That's right. That's right. I you know, there was something really interesting when the WikiLeaks thing happened recently, where somebody was saying on the news, they were saying, well, you know, WikiLeaks could be responsible for killing people by leaking these state secrets. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, the state is killing millions of people every, well, not millions, but hundreds of thousands of people, you know,
yeah.
every single year, right? So, yeah, it's exactly the same thing, right? We were loudmouthed and rude, but we weren't tearing things up. We weren't ruining people's lives. That was left to the powers that be.
Right, right. No, I agree. In 82, in September of 82, you did an interview for Hex Magazine where you said, what I try to do with the music is to elevate personal awareness. I know that was a long time ago, but could you tell us if you feel that still holds true for you today as well?
Well, that's what music did for me, right? So I think that my feeling was I needed to give back to music what music did for me, which was I grew up in a very conservative household, and if it hadn't been for rock and roll and punk rock, I probably would have joined the military and been in the first Gulf War and dropped bombs on people. So the fact that music was able to get in there and change my perspective, I mean, I don't know that it's a particularly useful mechanism for developing good political awareness, because it's very transient. You know, you can't do a lot of political discourse in the 3-minute song, but you can open up that moment of personal awareness, that sense that there's something bigger and better out there than what you are constrained by. And I think there's a lot of people from a punk background who that particularly spoke to. You know, if you grew up in a military household like me, or in the South like I did, and you were really kind of growing up behind this wall of ideology, this was the first stuff that really cut through it and opened up that sense of a bigger, different thing going on. And so since music did that for me, I wanted to do that with music.
And you were a military brat?
Yep, Navy.
Oh, okay, all right. Now, Vic, do you feel the influence of Articles of Faith was blunted by the fact that, you know, you guys were in Chicago?
Yeah, probably so. I mean, it's funny. In retrospect, I think we're a more well-known band now than we were back in the day, partly because I think the records have really stood the test of time pretty well, and then the Internet has made things so available to people. But in the day, being in Chicago, we did do 4 national tours, but, you know, nothing on the order of Black Flag or Husker Du or DOA, the guys who were constantly canvassing the country, you know. And
right.
There were places where people knew us. People knew us in Philadelphia. People knew us in San Francisco. So people knew us in Detroit. People knew us in Toronto. Those were good towns for us. But, yeah, it was, you know, outside of the Midwest, it was kind of hard to hear about Articles of Faith.
Yeah, no, I grew up in Philadelphia, and I remember hearing about you guys.
Yeah. Now, the first time we played in Philly, we played some guy's backyard. That was pretty interesting.
There's backyard shows for fun.
Yeah.
Now, Vic, I want to play a song right now. This is a song, Strata. It's one of your newer songs. This is one of your songs, actually. Could you tell us a little about the song before I play it?
Yeah, so I've got a studio in my house, and I do a lot of demos here. I did all of the Report Suspicious Activity stuff here in the house. I actually, on the new Articles of Faith record, I did the Coming Off the Rails and Hammer song I did here in the house, too. Usually what I'll do is I'll put together these demos, and then I'll play with whomever I'm collaborating with, and that's become the basis of the songs that we do. And Strata is a song that we were going to put on the Articles of Faith, the new Articles of Faith record, and it just didn't make the cut because we didn't have enough time to really work it up quite the way that it needed to be worked up. So the demo kind of stays the definitive version, but we might end up picking this back up if we record again. So there you go.
Okay. This is Strata by Vic Bondi.
I'm feeling like I'm feeling alive.
joining us tonight on San Clemente Punk on the Fight Words Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. Tonight we're joined by Vic Bondi, frontman for the legendary Chicago-based punk band Articles of Faith. Vic, welcome back. Vic, who did most of the writing for Articles of Faith, and was it a solo or a joint effort?
Well, we all wrote. Often it was usually me collaborating with Bill or Dave or Joe. Sometimes I wrote some of the stuff by myself, but generally we wrote stuff together. And on the new record, in fact, you know, here 25 years later, we couldn't actually write songs together because we are living in different cities. So, but actually, with A Vengeance, Dave's song, we wrote that. He wrote the music and I wrote the lyrics. So, you know, we were able to at least collaborate to that extent on the new record. And so everybody in the band pretty much wrote, with the exception of Dorian. Dorian really didn't write in the Articles of Faith days, but, you know, he's since put out a couple records on his own. So he's a pretty capable songwriter in his own right.
Okay. Now, Articles of Faith added Dorian, and I'm going to slaughter his last name, Takhbashkish?
It's Takhbashkish. It's Persian. He's from, his family's from Iran.
Oh, okay, okay. Now, he was added as a third guitarist. Was that to bring you out from behind the guitar, or what was the reasoning for that?
Well, this was right before we did the By This War, or the Wait EP, and by that time, the band had started to play so fast that I couldn't sing and play at the same time. It wasn't physically possible. So Dorian, we brought along to play guitar so that I could get in front and just sing. And it actually worked out great because he's a terrific musician and he really brought a lot of great skill to the band. We brought a lot of the great riffs on those records are Dorian's riffs. And so he brought a lot of dimension to the band. And then when we slowed down a little bit and we went back to playing, or I went back to playing guitar, then we were doing three guitars, and it was just massive live. I mean, if we could get the tuning right, it was massive. A lot of times, if it was out of tune, it wasn't so great. But when we got the tuning right, it was massive.
Okay. All right. Now, when Articles of Faith really broke in Chicago, what was the Chicago scene like?
So I started going to shows in Chicago in 1980, and at that time, there was an underground punk club called Oz, which was kind of the center of the punk scene. And it was a floating club because the cops would raid it. And the scene was very art student. It was a little bit weird for me. I loved punk rock, but the Chicago scene was just, it was kind of art damaged, and probably too art damaged for my taste. And this is when Naked Raygun was a seriously art-damaged band, and Silver Abuse was playing. And the first really kick-ass punk band in the city that I saw was the Effigies. And they definitely were a killer, great live group and had good songs. And then Strike Under was even better when I finally got around to seeing them. So Oz incubated Strike Under, Naked Raygun, and the Effigies. It was pretty instrumental in that. At the time, there were a couple other places in the city you could go for punk. There was a dance club called Exit that would have punk on specific nights, and you could go and dance to it. But it was, you know, what they would call punk was everything from Ultravox to Billy Idol to the UK sub. So it wasn't necessarily punk. And there was O'Banion's later on. When we started playing, there was O'Banion's. There was also a place called Space Place, which was on the west side in the Stockhouse, the Slaughterhouse District. It was a combination of a performance space and a practice space. We actually had a practice room at Space Place. They had converted the old meat lockers in the slaughterhouse into practice space. And then they had a performance space upstairs where you would play. And so we would play. There was a really great Chicago band from back in the day called DV8 that Eric Spreitzer, who became the drummer for Naked Ray Gun, he was in DV8. They played with us a lot, and there was a band called Urban Decay that played quite a bit at Space Place. We actually ministry practiced next door to us, but that was kind of in the days when Al was in his dress-wearing new romantic phase, so we didn't have a lot in common with him. So it was really the scene wasn't welcoming to Articles of Faith. The scene was very it was very pretentious. It had a lot of attitude. A lot of the punks were actually the sons and daughters of professors from Northwestern. There were a lot of kids from Evanston in the scene, so it was kind of suburban. And so when we started playing, I don't know that I would say that the scene was welcoming to us, but eventually things kind of warmed up. I think Articles of Faith managed to amalgamate the real misfits, misanthropes, social rejects, retards, fools, damn bastards of the city all started coming to our shows. And so because we didn't have a whole lot, you didn't have to dress up like an oi boy to come to one of our shows. We certainly didn't do that stuff. So we gradually got a much bigger draw because of the fact that we didn't have a whole lot of rules for going to an Articles of Faith show. You just had to want to listen to really hard, aggressive music and have a good time.
Okay. Now, Articles of Faith signed with Virgin Sound to release your initial EP, What We Want Is Free. How did that come about?
So I don't know that we signed with them. That makes it sound more music business than it was. I mean,
okay.
Virgin Sound was this guy Bob who lived in Ohio, and I think he loaned us $250 for it or something like that. So that's how he signed the band. And you know, that's the way it was back in those days. There weren't, you know,
right.
the music business itself hated hardcore and hated punk. And
right.
you couldn't find hardcore and punk records in the mainstream record stores. It was a completely DIY movement where people would put out their own records because nobody else would. But it was expensive to do records then. It's not like today, you know, I could do a song like Strata in my basement, and it actually would sound better than it would have sounded in a studio back in those days. But in those days, you'd have to put up $500 or $1,200 to go into a studio to record. And that was a hell of a lot of money for guys that were working on a construction crew. And, so there was that and all the equipment that you'd have to have. And then when you would put the record out, you'd have to do the mastering. You have to send it to a record plant where they actually have to pour the plastic into the grooves. And all of this stuff cost quite a bit of money. So it was a bit of a difficult endeavor for people living on a shoestring budget. And Virgin Sound was just a guy who really liked the band and, helped us put the record out. But, you know, this Virgin Sound was, he helped Decroison, he helped us. But we did subsequent pressings of What We Want Is Free on our own label, What Wasteland, which, again, we had borrowed money. We borrowed money from this guy, Bob Sukow, who drove a beer truck. He had some money to loan us. He also helped, he put all the money behind the Central American Social Club shows. We rented out this hall on Broadway in Chicago that these Guatemalans owned, and we would put our own shows on there. They were very, very great shows. They were, there was no alcohol served. We had the best punk bands in the country playing there. We had the Big Boys. We had MDC. We had Minor Threat. We had Husker Du, we had Decroison. We had so many great bands come through town, Channel 3, and play those shows, and it was just a ball. And we put those shows on with Mike's money, and then eventually became self-sustaining. So it was actually, there were enough people coming to those shows that they managed to do a pretty good line of business. So it was exciting. But, it was hard to put out a record in those days. It was a lot of work.
Right. Now, Although What We Want Is Free was Article Faith for Solo released, you were released, Article Faith was released on a comp tape on the Noise Fanzine's comp, Charred Remains, which has become, you know, exceedingly rare and coveted. And it included bands like Void and Husker Du. How did it feel to share a release with those bands?
Well, that was Bob Moore, again, who put that record out. I think Toxic Reasons was on that. There were a lot of good bands on that tape. But, you know, that's part of the way that things were done back then. If you didn't have enough money to put a record out, what you'd do is you'd put a tape out, mixtapes. I mean, the first Bad Brains record was entirely on a cassette tape that made its way from one person's band to another person's band. It was that was the low cost version of putting a record out, was to put out these tapes. And actually didn't know, you know, Bob had asked us for certain tracks that we had recorded, so we gave them to him. But we didn't know what the record would be or who would be on it. We just, you know, he said he wanted to put out a tape that would have a bunch of hardcore bands on it. Would we want to be on it? We were like, sure, why not?
Right.
I love Void and Husker Du. Both those bands are great. So, you know, but there were a lot of good bands on that tape.
Now, do you think Articles of Faith was kind of, I'm sorry?
I think Personality Crisis was on that tape too, weren't they? They were a really good band from Winnipeg. Yeah.
Yes, they were. Yeah. Now, did Articles of Faith start out as a political band, or did you grow to become one?
No, we were pretty political from the beginning. That was another thing. I think the unifying, the glue that held the strangeness of Articles of Faith together were politics and speed.
Right. Now, after What We Want Is Free was released on Virgin Sound, you actually released Wait as an EP, kind of as a split release on Wasteland, which was your own label, and Paul Mahern, who was at Zero Boys, label Affirmation. How did that come about?
I don't remember, really. I mean, probably Paul had half the money and we had half the money. We went down and recorded it at Paul's studio. He had a studio down there that he was doing. You know, Paul became a big engineer. He just engineered the latest John Cougar Mellencamp record, right?
Really?
He's quite an engineer. Actually, I really wanted to see Zero Boys at Riot Fest, but I had to leave before they played, so I couldn't go to it. But yeah, Paul was a terrific engineer, and we had used his engineering facilities in Indianapolis to record that EP. And, you know, I don't know whether that's why they were it was a joint release or not. He had also put out the master tape and had done some recording with us on that, which was actually the first time I think a vinyl record of us came out was on the master tape. So Buried Alive and False Security were on that first master tape record, and I think that was the first time Articles of Faith ever appeared on vinyl.
Okay. Now, did Articles of Faith, where did you tour to support these?
Well, actually, that was, you know, like I said, we did four or five or six tours of the U.S. We did a bunch of tours. Probably not enough to sustain a real band. I mean, you know, Huskers and Black Flag were on the road continuously. I mean, they never went off the road. Our first tour, we played, you know, again, it was a kind of a DIY thing in those days. So Husker Du and DOA and Dead Kennedys would give you these lists of guys that you could contact that would have clubs in these cities. And you'd call them up and you'd say, hey, I'd like to play a show, and they'd put something together. The first shows we played out of town, I think probably in 82, we played up in Minneapolis with the Huskers. And then we went on and we played this route through Canada that everybody back in the day was doing. You would play 2 weeks, a week each, at a hotel in Winnipeg, and then in another week at a hotel in Calgary. And this, every band did this. It was us, we did it, NBC did it, Huskers did it, DOA did it, I mean, Black Flag did it. Everybody played the Royal Calgarian, which was a bordello that serviced a bunch of roughnecks from the oil fields. And I forget the place that we played in Winnipeg, but it was this deal where you do a week stint at the hotel in these dingy ass bars with, you know, drunken Indians and drunken roughnecks as your clientele, and they would give you a seedy ass room that wasn't being used by prostitutes for you to stay in. And that was like the beginning of our first Articles of the Faith tour. And I think we took that first one, we went down the West Coast. We had to cut the tour short because we pulled into Portland, Oregon. We played a show with Poison Idea down there. And just as we pulled into the club, huge thump from the bottom of the van. And we go and we look underneath the van, and the chassis of our van actually had split into two, and the engine was hanging down. And so we actually had this, you know, now we don't have a van, and we had this unbelievably awesome roadie named Steve Ross. And so what Steve did is he went and took the van to a junkyard and got an arc welder and arc welded the chassis of the van back together. And then we went back onto California. So that was the first tour that we did. And then we did tours of Texas, down through the Midwest. We did a couple of East Coast jaunts. We did a bunch of shows up in Canada. We had a terrific show in Toronto, Canada once with MDC. And on that occasion, we were hanging out at this guy's house after the show. We were chatting with the MDC guys, and this guy runs into the house, and he's like, "Everybody's got to clear out of here. The Mounties are on their way." And so everybody runs out, and as we start to run out of the house, I've been sitting on this window seat, and this guy runs over to the window seat, and he opens it up, and he's got a bunch of AK-47s and rocket launchers in the seat, right? And these were like the anti-nuke guys up in Canada who were running their own little private war against the government. And the whole show, the house we were staying in was getting raided by the Mounties for those guys. It was. We definitely cleared out of their path.
Now, Vic, I want to play another song. This is kind of the anthemic by this war. Could you tell us a little about the song before I play it?
Yeah, so, you know, Reagan had his own little wars going on back in the 80s, right? So he had that huge disaster of a fiasco in the Mideast where all the Marines were blown up in the barracks, and then after that he decided to, you know, recoup American honor by invading this little country called Grenada in the Caribbean. And I just thought, you know, these guys, they sell you war all the time. And so I wrote a song called "Buy This War" about selling you the war. And unfortunately, it's still a very timely song.
This is Articles of Faith with "By This War." welcome back to San Clemente Punk, proudly part of the Fighting Words Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. We are talking with legendary punk rock musician Vic Bondi tonight. Vic is, of course, the frontman for the long-running punk band Articles of Faith. If you'd like to talk to Vic, you can call us at 347-202-0832 or click on the free Skype link on the show's page. Vic, again, thank you for joining us on San Clemente Punk tonight. Vic, you know, your next LP, Give Thanks, was produced by Bob Mould on Reflex Records. How did that relationship start?
So the Husker Du were really the black flag of the Midwest. They were kind of the first punk band out of the box. And because we were very much a do-it-yourself startup mentality back in those days, Huskers blazed the trail for everybody. So they would tell you, okay, if you're going to come to Minneapolis, these are the clubs you want to play. They would even help you set them up. They would even do things like, I think we played at some club in Minneapolis one night, and it wasn't a very well-attended show. I mean, nobody came for either Huskers or Articles of Faith. And so the promoter lost a lot of money, and so he stiffed Articles of Faith and paid Husker Du. And then Husker Du paid us out of their share, right? I mean, because that's the way they were. That's the way that you rolled in those days.
Right.
And Bob was and is a pretty righteous human being, a really awesome person. And so he helped us out. And Bob liked Articles of Faith a lot, and so we ended up playing with Husker Du quite often. We had some really fun shows with them. We had an incredible show with them in Madison, Wisconsin once. Husker Du, Die Kreuzen, Mech Mensch, and Articles of Faith. It was really quite a show. So we became pretty good friends with Husker Du. They slept on our floor. We slept on theirs. I remember when they came back, I think in 84, they had come back from the West Coast with Zen Arcade, and they played Zen Arcade for us before, way before it ever got it released, and it was just, we knew that was going to be just an awesome record, a great record. So, you know, when we wanted to put out our first record again, we didn't have any money, and Bob had this label that he had created, Reflex. So he loaned us the money. We actually did that record at a really pretty high-end studio up in Evanston, Illinois. And in the middle of recording, in fact, the police, their management, called the studio, and they tried to bump us out of the studio. And Bob got on the phone. He's like, no, fuck the police. We've got a gig here. They're not getting this space. So he was really – he was definitely the godfather of Articles of Faith. He helped us come into being and gave us a lot of encouragement. And, you know, we learned things from him. So it was great to have Bob's support.
Shortly after the release of Give Thanks, Articles of Faith were given the first song in the incredible piece, 2LP and 72-page fanzine. It included bands like DOA, DRI, Dead Kennedys, Crass, Vicious Circle, and the Subhumans, and a lot more legends. First, how did it feel to have your hard work recognized? And second, do you still have a copy of the LP?
I don't. I would love a copy of that record. I don't have a copy of that record, and we didn't know it was going to be the first song on that record. I think one of the reasons that Up Against the Wall became a very well-known song for Articles of Faith was because it was the first song on that record. I mean, part of the problem with 72 bands on a single record, you're probably not going to get to all of them. I'd hate to be the 72nd
right.
band on that record. But being number one, yeah. They chose us for being number one, and so it worked out really well for us.
Now, Vic, in the movie American Hardcore, you stated if you're looking for radicalism in the 1980s, you should look at hardcore. And having grown up along with the Philly punk scene, I know that to be true. However, could you explain what you meant to the listeners that weren't around at that time?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's this, and this is certainly my feeling as I've gotten older too. I think when I was young and when I was playing in hardcore, I had a tendency to feel like, you know, it's year zero and I'm a revolutionary and all things begin with what we're doing right now. We're going to burn up the world. We're going to blow up the music industry first, and then we're going to blow up the whole goddamn system, and it's going to be a great, wonderful utopia later on. I'm sure that was part of the thinking that I had back in those days. In retrospect, I recognize that this idea of standing up for human values in the face of inhuman practices, it's a kind of persistent strategy in human history. And so this modality, this approach to experience goes back a long ways, and music always has this mechanism for helping to focus those strategies of articulating and manifesting human values in inhuman contexts and in when there are inhumane practices. So it doesn't matter whether it's punk rock or whether it's folk music or it's blues or it's, you know, there are it's reggae. There's mechanisms for people to find their voice when their voice is taken from them, and harness those voices with the power of music, and in a way hold on to their humanity through that process. And so what I felt like we were doing in the 80s was making a contribution to that long tradition. And it was an important contribution. I mean, there was a lot of, I think, kind of half-assed radical practices back in those days that really didn't amount to anything. I mean, when we were playing hardcore music, the radicalism of the 60s was being buried by Reagan. And part of the way it got buried was that radicals in academia, they adopted philosophies like post-structuralism that seemed radical and resistant, but in fact actually didn't do a whole hell of a lot. They were just a way of justifying a paycheck from an institution. So there was a lot of faux radicalism in the 80s, and there wasn't a lot of people marching in the streets. There certainly, I think, by contrast to the 1960s, there isn't a powerful radical movement in the 1980s. But there was hardcore, and there was a lot of, what we were doing would spill over into political activism as times. I think there's photographs online of Articles of Faith playing in Grant Park. That was a huge May Day peace rally that we did there, that, you know, everybody marched through the streets of Chicago because it was 84 and Reagan was proposing that ridiculous missile defense crap and, you know, we're going to bomb Russia crap. I mean, that's the other thing is it's easy to forget now that in the 1980s there was this ridiculous Cold War going on with the Soviet Union, and you had tens of thousands of nuclear weapons pointed at each of these countries from across the ocean, and, you know, your existence was subject to termination by accident or intent without your say-so at any moment. And so there was a lot of anxiety that people had about nuclear weaponry. There was a TV show called The Day After that was very popular in the 1980s because it was a depiction of what happened after a nuclear exchange between the United States and the Soviet Union. And, you know, there was a lot of discussions about nuclear winter. There was a lot of anxiety about this. And we were active participants in the anti-war movement, as were DOA and MDC and the Dead Kennedys. So it wasn't that the anti-war movement came from hardcore, but hardcore certainly gave an articulate voice to those political resistance strategies. And to this day, I feel very proud of hardcore as a mechanism for expressing human values in the face of inhuman practices.
Okay.
Now, Articles of Faith were said to have been fed up with the age restrictions of the clubs and bar scenes. You guys actually started booking DIY shows in the Chicago Central American Social Club, and you talked about these briefly. What effect did this have on the punk scene in Chicago at the time?
It made it. It made the punk scene in Chicago. It made the hardcore scene. I think if you were to say that the Effigies, Naked Ray Gun, and Strike Under, and the Club Oz defined the punk scene in Chicago, then the hardcore scene was Articles of Faith, Rites of the Accused, and Negative Element, who were all playing these Central American Social Club shows. So it was the hardcore scene in the city, and the best hardcore bands in the country came and played that club, that hall. It wasn't a club. It really was a lot of fun.
Now, Vic, after In the Life, or In This Life, the 87 release of Articles of Faith, you guys split, and you moved on to form Alloy, and then came Jonesberry. Was that with people in the scene that you liked, or how did those bands come about?
So, actually, Articles of Faith broke up in 85. The record came out in 87 after we were long gone.
Right.
And at that point, I was in Boston in graduate school. And for a couple of years there, 85 to 87, I didn't do anything. I did record the solo record that came out on Wishing Well Records a couple of years after I recorded it, which, again, it started as, you know, tape that I gave people, and then more and more people got it, so then these guys in California put it out as a record. But I didn't really play a lot of music. And then in 88, 89, I started feeling like I needed to play music again, and I hooked up with two other guys and actually formed Jonesberry first. And we had an interesting relationship to the Boston hardcore scene at that point, because we were a very experimental band, and we were a very inconsistent band. We had rules about how we would make music. Everybody else were making these. They played the same set every night. Everything was very well rehearsed and practiced. And so our attitude was, we're going to practice a lot, but we're going to completely improvise the set list. We improvise the songs. We'd have middle passages that would go on for 8 or 14 or 20 measures until Jamie would do a double snare shot or something to bring us all back. It was just James Van Bramer and Jeff Goddard and myself, so it was a three-piece and was easy to improvise. So we were an inconsistent live band, which meant that there were nights when you would come and see Jonesberry and probably was the best show you've ever seen in your life, and there were nights when you would come see Jonesberry and it was probably one of the worst shows you ever seen in your life. But that's okay. I mean, we wanted – that was by intent. You know, we didn't want to just be a cookie-cutter band.
Right.
The band that loved us the most was Slapshot. So the most aggressive, hardcore, macho, bang-up band in the city of Boston – loved Jonesberry. That was this band where I was listening to John Coltrane at the time, and I was playing John Coltrane solos on my guitar, and we were really more of an experimental jazz punk band or something. We were very, and some of the songs were kind of light. They weren't really heavy songs, but Slapshot loved it. And so we kept opening up for Slapshot. It was just, it was a hilarious thing because Slapshot's audience hated us. But Slapshot, the band, loved us so much so that Steve Rasteen often would play the second guitar. He would come and join us and play the songs. So our relationship to the Boston scene was pretty funny. We were often lumped together with Buffalo Tom, who was a popular band at the time. But we stayed one foot firmly in hardcore just by virtue of the fact that we were good friends with Slapshot, and they were always having us open up for them. And then when Jonesberry broke up, I formed Alloy with my friend Pat Mahoney, and then who had been in Uniform Choice, and then with Colin and Roger from Dag Nasty, the rhythm section for Dag Nasty. And Colin and Roger were living in Northampton, and Pat and I were living in Boston, and so it was pretty easy for us to put the band together. We recorded a record, and then 5 days later went on tour in Europe and had very successful tours in Europe. I'd say we actually were more of a German band than anything. We played three or four tours in Europe, really quite successful tours in Europe, and we only played one tour of the United States, so it was really kind of interesting. We had one tour we opened up with Fugazi, and we were traveling with those guys quite a bit, and it was certainly great fun. We were playing baseball with those guys almost every other afternoon. Great fun.
Now, Vic, Articles of Faith played periodically over the years, but truly reformed at the 2010 Riot Fest. How was the feeling in the band at the time?
So it was, you know, it was one of these things where Riot Mike asked me if the band would reform for Riot Fest, and I'm like, other people had mentioned Riot Fest to me before, and so I thought, well, why not? And I called the guys up and I said, do you want to do it? And everybody said, yeah. And then we all started to panic about it because, you know, Articles of Faith music is very fast, very aggressive. It's really physically challenging. And we're all middle-aged men now, you know. So
right.
I wasn't sure that we could play it. I wasn't sure that Bill could play the drums. I mean, it's so fast. I didn't want us to do one of these things where, you know, Articles of Faith, like all these other old, moldy, hardcore bands, gets back together and does a tour and sells a bunch of T-shirts and all this other bullshit and feed their beer guts. I wanted to do something more interesting than that. So we decided that we would just play the two shows at Riot Fest. We weren't going to do any touring. We decided that we would do a record of new material so that at least we would bring the old creativity to the table, and it wasn't just an exercise in nostalgia, that we would have something to say about our life and times now, just as we did in 1984. And when we put those kind of rules in place for the band, it was an incredible experience. I mean, we worked incredibly hard for those two shows. I lost about 12 pounds, and Bill was practicing 6 hours a day to get his chops back. And, you know, we worked and worked and worked so that we would be a really good band when you came to the show. And we played those two shows, and we were good. Those were excellent shows. The second night that we played was transcendent and beautiful, and the people that were in the room that night, they just brought so much energy and life to the party. It made those songs really, really memorable and exciting, and it was wonderful to play with those guys again. They're really good fellas, and they were my friends back in the day, and they'll be the friends of mine till the day I die.
Okay. Now, Vic, we've pretty much run out of time, and it truly has been a pleasure getting to know you over this hour. Articles of Faith has New Normal Catastrophe out now on Alternative Tentacle Records. But I want to give you the final few minutes to tell us where we can find Articles of Faith, besides Alternative Tentacles, and your other bands on the web, and anywhere we can buy any of the bands that we've talked about, as well as Articles of Faith. The floor is yours.
Yeah, so you can get Articles of Faith on Alternative Tentacles. The new record is out. You can also get the band that I was in for the last 6 years was Report Suspicious Activity. That was myself, Jay Robbins from Jawbox, Eric Deno from Kerosene 454, and Darren Zentek from Kerosene 454. We did two LPs. They're both available on Alternative Tentacles as well. The Alloy stuff is out of print and really hard to find, and if you can find Eliminate in particular, the very first Alloy record, it'd be worth your time. It's a good record. And Jones Very is on J Tree, and you can get a couple of Jones Very records from them. So any of those avenues, I think Jones Very, RSA, and AOF are all on iTunes and Zune, and good luck finding the alloy.
You know what? I'm gonna start looking for it now.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Now, Vic, thank you so much for spending the time with us tonight. I'm going to close the song with a new song off of your New Normal Catastrophe with a Vengeance. Could you tell us a little about the song before I play it?
Yeah, this was one of Dave's songs, and actually I think I misspoke before. The song that Dave and I wrote together on the new record is New Normal Catastrophe. This one is actually Dave's words and music, and it's quite a barn burner. So it was really exciting to play it. It felt like this was one of the songs that when we started playing together, it felt like we had never not been playing. It felt like we just picked off where we left off in 1985. So good on Dave for writing it, an exciting song to play.
It is a great song. Now, Vic, thank you so much. We will catch up with you again. This is Articles of Faith, and this is With a Vengeance.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.